Hi, and welcome to episode 7 of the Maximum Red Podcast. This is your host, Derek Johnson. In this episode, I'm going to be celebrating the start of the college football season and Nebraska's season. Going to go through some great preview articles from Sam McCune and Dirk Chatelain, and I'm going to hit some great tweets on Jack Gangwish's reception of a black shirt, and also the hashtag WhatShootsTweeted. And I'm also going to be offering up my prediction for the season opener, Nebraska and BYU, and gosh, that feels so good to say. So let's get it off. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Our quarterbacks are throwing and the fall wind is blowing and be good cheer. It's the most wonderful time of the year. Yes, my dear fellow fans, kickoff weekend is upon us. Maybe by the time you're listening to this, you've watched a few games. Or even if you haven't, you know they're on their way. You know that today, wherever you are, players are going through the final walkthrough, stay in hotels. Some players are busing to the stadium already. It's here. The game that we've heard about for months and months and months has come. And I want to talk to you a little bit about something. And that is, you know, you don't always remember where you were for every single game. I mean, you know, let's face it. A season opener in 2006, I don't remember where I was. Oh, actually, yeah. I was working at the Nebraska State Fair at the time in a beer garden. We were playing Louisiana Tech and a bunch of people filled it up. Great cheering, great opener, and, well, forgettable, so I'll stop there. My point is, most of us just remember the people we were with. You know, I can remember the last time Nebraska played a game. It was in the dead of winter. My family was home for Christmas. My parents and my sister came over to my house. I baked a pizza. We ate it. And then after pizza, we sat down, complained about the overrun in the Penn State-Boston College game. Then finally Nebraska started. We saw the first touchdown and that whirlwind first quarter before my mother and sister left to go home to go to sleep because my sister had an early flight out of Omaha. Whenever you're ready to cut your late rates, Lincoln will appreciate it. But you get the idea. This weekend necessarily isn't about the return of football, though we're all pumped for that. I'm all pumped for the snark and stuff. It's going to be great to get on Twitter and start quipping away. Start forming those new opinions of Riley. What's more important with that is, once again, I'll be with my family this weekend watching the game. And that's really what I'm looking forward to. Being out there on the couch and being together, watching football and just having a good time with the family. And, you know, wherever you are, just know that there are so many people who look forward to this day just so they can hang out with people they know and it's just a little less awkward. And that, my friends, is the true meaning of college football's kickoff weekend. And you know, it is also the end of a glowing period. Well, maybe it won't end. Maybe Nebraska will beat BYU 44-21, and we'll all get excited about Mike Riley, or at least fake excited for Riley, but probably not. You know, I talked about this a little bit, and that is, when you hire a coach, you whitewash past his record. Every place that coach has been, all of a sudden is the worst school ever, and you start to find things out that you didn't before. You start to realize that, oh yeah, that coach, he has his problems too. And I'll go back to what I looked up when Mark Riley got hired here in Nebraska. His record at Oregon State was 93-80. Now, okay, it's Oregon State, but you got to remember, before, oh, about 2010, 2011 or so, the Pac-10 was largely awful. I mean, remember, when Carroll was at USC, he was just mowing through teams. There was no one to challenge him. I mean, really, Chip Kelly didn't get there. I mean, I want to say it was 2007, 2008 when he took over as the OC at Oregon. And, yeah, Bilotti was pretty good, but, you know, he had his share of 8-win seasons. You know, they didn't really take off. And Riley's best year, 9 wins. And a lot of losses that you would consider really bad losses. You know, not just the Eastern Washington loss, although, yes, we all know Eastern Washington, good FCS school, sure. But, you know, lost at home to the Arizona State team, the Arizona team that Nebraska crushed. Even last year, lost to 5-7 Cal at home, lost to losing record Washington at home, you know. And almost every year, even in his good years, Riley, you know, quite a few losses to teams that were finishing 500 or below. And, you know, I wrote about this in my piece in preview. Nebraska, under Pelini, you got 3 losses to teams that finished with 7 wins or less. Iowa State 2009, Texas 2010, Northwestern 2011. You know, let's say, you know, let's just say they lose at home to Northwestern. You know? How are you going to react? You see, this is the thing. All new coaches. The first game, it smashed the mirror time. You get to see exactly what this guy's made of and the wins and losses you're going to have to live with for 9 months after the day after Thanksgiving. And it's not going to be pretty. Oh, Nebraska may go 11-1, and for Riley's sake, I hope he does. Because I don't know that he's going to have a schedule as favorable as this year for 3 or 4 more years. And by then, he may burn out. There's so much, you know, right in this year. Oh, there is every year. But I want to tie something in. When you're around with your family and friends, watching the game in the comfort of your living room or TV, or if you're in an airport watching it on your phone, or if you're there in the stands at Memorial Stadium tailgating with your friends, take a really good look around. Because you know what? You never know how long you're going to be great. Because I'm sure there were some people who, you know, when Minnesota last went to the Rose Bowl around like 1960 or so, thought it was going great and thought it would stay that way forever. And, you know, clearly, that didn't happen. People, you don't know how many great 9-win seasons yet. And to be clear here, this is not a commentary on whether or not they should have gotten rid of Pelini. Although, if Riley never wins more than 8 games, I think we all know how that narrative is going to go 20 years from now. It's just to say, look around, because the future of your program, it's not guaranteed. Oh yeah, you may think you're great. You may think that you have it all together. But the bottom line is, I don't know, and you don't know. So enjoy it, as long as it lasts. Okay, now I want to get on to some articles, and this is an interesting one, because this was ended up both being an article and a conversation I had on Twitter with Dirk Chatelain. Dirk, if you're listening, thanks for coming back and qualifying this. And by the way, if you are a sports writer or radio host and I tweet something at you or some snark or something, a lot of times I just want some clarification on something. So if you just tweet it back to me, you know, I'll retweet your clarification to my followers so that everyone understands that. So, but anyway, to this article, Dirk went to Youngstown when he was in Ohio for Will Shields' induction to the Hall of Fame and also Vic Tinglehoff's induction. And Dirk happened to cross paths with Bo Pelini, approached him, and said, would he give a comment for the story that Dirk was writing? And, you know, it was a very good story about, you know, Youngstown and kind of how that community's changed and, you know, some of the challenges that, you know, Bo is facing trying to rebuild that program. And, you know, this is kind of the interesting thing that I got into with Dirk there, is that when he ran into Pelini at this high school, I forget if it was a game or it was just a practice. I think it was a practice because this was still early August. Is, you know, Dirk sees him there and, you know, what is he supposed to do? Well, if you're all the way out there, of course you're going to, you know, walk up to Bo Pelini and say, hey, Bo, can I chat with you for 5 minutes? And, you know, as I put it to him, well, what is Bo going to think of Dirk if he sees Dirk walking, you know, running in the other direction? So anyway, Dirk goes up to Bo, says, can I talk to you? Bo says no, and then walks away. And the thing that I found was real petty was, you know, Dirk's driving away, and he gets a call from the SID at Youngstown, who chides him for just approaching Pelini out of the blue. And by the way, that SID is calling him because Bo wants him to call Chatelain. And listen, I don't blame, and I think even Dirk would say this, you know, Chatelain and Pelini probably had some beef. You know, to be honest, I mean, I get some of the things, and, you know, there's a lot of speculation that I don't want to get into. And it's fine if you don't like the guy. And, you know, I think Dirk even kind of understood why Pelini wasn't going to come, and I don't think he even expected him to. But for Pelini to go, oh, call his SID and tell him to call Chatelain, that's just some of the useless anger that led to a lot of Nebraska's 9-4 seasons. You know, and it's just another reason why, you know, even if you don't like Bo, why you can at least look at it and say, well, at least we don't have to deal with that anymore. So anyway, great article by Chatelain. Read it. And if you want to go to my Twitter timeline, at DerekJohnson05, you can probably see our conversation yet. You know, another article that really caught my eye was Ann McEwen's article on Mark Banker. Now, this is one I have a little bit of a beef with. And, you know, by the way, both, you know, I didn't get a chance to, you know, actually get the print edition, but, you know, a lot of people, it is one of the more creative editions of the paper that comes out, so if you have a chance, go try to pick it up and buy it here. This article that McEwen wrote about Banker, I do have a little bit of a problem with it, because, you know, one of the things that, you know, he starts off with this story about when Nebraska played Baylor in 2009, and some fan went to Pelini's press conference, and, you know, for the sole point of criticizing Sean Watson, or yelling a vague criticism at Watson. My issue with this article is, you know, he tended to go through and say, well, you know, whoever the coordinator is for the side of the ball that the head coach Cook Zone, or the opposite side, that coordinator takes the most criticism. It was going through Cosgrove and Watson, and, you know, while that's all fine and dandy, compare that, I think there's a very important deal that McEwen left out. When Watson came to Nebraska, there wasn't this huge groundswell of support at Colorado of, oh, we have to get rid of Sean Watson. No. There wasn't this huge groundswell of Wisconsin, like, oh, we have to get rid of Cosgrove. I mean, I'm sure there were fans who didn't like them. You know, I've read some of the quotes from former Wisconsin players that, you know, they weren't enthralled with Cosgrove's defense. But there wasn't this huge groundswell. And, oh, by the way, Watson, not doing bad in his second career. But job after Nebraska. So, to equate that with Banker, who comes in, and, you know, listen, I've written about this. I think Banker may do fine at Nebraska. I also think that, you know, he could basically lose his games to Northwestern and Illinois and just be a complete, you know, moron. And, you know, like, here's the difference. If Banker fails, you can't say that you didn't see it coming. I mean, literally, like, my biggest, you know, worry with this guy is that he didn't adapt in that conference. I mean, give me a guy, even if I know a guy can adapt his defense, that's the guy I want. I don't want a guy who says, well, this is the way it's always been done. You know, even if it so happens that Banker's defense is the one that's going to defend Wisconsin and Iowa and Minnesota the best, you know, I get that, but I still would rather have a guy who I know who can adapt and who can change. And, you know, I mean, listen, there's a reason that Bob DeCarolis walked into Mike Riley's office and told him to get rid of him. I mean, frankly, it's kind of arrogant that after Mike Riley heard that, that he says, yeah, you know what, this guy that I was just told to fire, I'm going to bring him to my a new job with his self-important. And that's my whole problem with the McEwen article, is that, you know, you can't really equate, you know, Watson coming into Nebraska the way Banker is, or even Cosgrove, you know. And, you know, by the way, I think, you know, going about Watson, I think some of Nebraska's offensive problems from 2009 and 2010, you can put a lot of those on Bo. For the way he was, you know, if he was running practice where he wasn't giving the offense reps against defense other than his, then yeah, you can absolutely put that on Bo. So, you know, that's it. Great article. I just, you know, wish he would have put that angle on it. You know, in a lot of ways it was like his, you know, McEwen wrote this article comparing all the QBs in the Big Ten West, said, oh, they're the same guy. I mean, watch Mitch Leidner's throwing motion, watch Tommy Armstrong and Joel Stave's throwing motion, and they're not the same guy. They're asked to do different things. And, you know, Armstrong basically had to, you know, had that same issue we were talking about before. He had to go against Pelini's defense, which he, in all of spring and all of fall camp, and then when it gets to regular season, he just hits one week of Minnesota's defense, and Pelini thinks he's ready. So that, you know, again, which Sam would do, bring a little bit more context into that, but, you know, otherwise, good article. Then I want to speak a little bit to the World Herald. I'm hitting a lot of World Herald stuff here. They did a whole profile of Riley, how he was walking about practice. The one bits in there I did like is that, you know, how Riley can kind of subtly sneak up on drill, put in, you know, his two cents to the player or coach there. And, you know, it's kind of, what was even more interesting to me was that the fact that Bo Pelini spent most of his time
you know, talking with the defensive backs and linebackers during practice up until last year when he was involved in the punt game, which, as we know, got dramatically better. You know, it just goes to show you, I mean, you know, one thing that, you know, I forget who it was, I think it was McEwen, you know, said this last year, basically Bo's opinion in a press conference was dictated by how the defense did that day. Like, if you had a game like Purdue, where, yeah, Nebraska was probably a lot closer to being in an edgy situation in the second half, but because the defense played well enough, Pelini was like, yeah, I'm really happy about this, compared to Rutgers' better overall performance, but the defense had less to do with the outcome of the game and gave up all those long plays. So that was a great tidbit. And, yeah, you know, both Journal Star, World Herald, great job getting us prepared for the season, and, you know, hopefully they keep it up. Okay, now I want to get into some of the great tweets, and actually I've got a couple of standalone tweets, and then a couple of trends I want to talk about here. So, first, this tweet is from @BrianRTowell. How to take a 62-year-old man and have him look 80? This is, of course, tweeting about the Omaha World Herald's cover of Mike Riley. I didn't think it was that bad. Maybe just a little glossy, but whatever, Brian. Another tweet from Brian Gustafson @HuskerXRBC. Maybe bring in the end zones and make this an 8-man game Saturday, referring to, of course, BYU having another likely suspension after one of their cornerbacks is arrested for assault. And earlier this week, Salt Creek and Stadium tweeted, "There's too much positivity happening. Let's go kick some cats or something. #GBR, #BeatBYU. And then there were two really interesting tweets that happened on Twitter the past couple days. First, there was when the video of the black shirts went viral. A lot of people chose to focus on the reaction of Jack English, which I'll admit the first time I watched it, I didn't think it was that big a deal, but, you know, people picked up on it, and I didn't even identify that as crying, but, you know, I guess maybe he didn't, you know, more power to him. You know, even Andy Abels picked up on it, and he tweeted about it. There's a couple other good ones. @HuskerPower66 tweeted, "Jack Gangwis is Christian Piger a Jace, and that's okay with me." Then @Jeff_Spicoli tweeted, "If the Jack English video doesn't make you emotional, then you are not a true Husker fan." @BlackShirtFresh tweeted, "Admit it, after Jack English got his black shirt, we all became Jack English for a minute and shed a small tear." And then finally, @D2Mart tweeted, "I've been dreading a CFB blog, but Jack Gangwis changed that yesterday." Jack, you're listening. We all enjoyed it, and you inspired all of us. And you're going to bring the stadium to your feet with your first sack on Saturday. And then I wanted to get on something else. There was a tweet that started, I don't know who started it, maybe it was @FeetCanWrite. I think @NDAMUKAT, that's NDAMUKAT, was starting this tweet with this hashtag, "What Schutz tweeted." Now, as you all know, John Schutz, the former sports director of KTV in Lincoln, was going to be the new PA voice at Morrell Stadium. Then it was found out that he had posted something disparaging about the university. you know, and if, you know, the post that was making the rounds, I read it, and I tweeted it out. Well, I tweeted out the article. I think Dirk Chatelain talked to him. It was basically a generic criticism of Harvey Perlman. It didn't bother me. You know, I'm not going to lie to you. When I post on Facebook and when I tweet, I do everything, even the fairly harmless stuff, I just assume somebody's going to pull it up and say it in a way that I don't even intend. And if I think of it, I'll edit it. And, you know, maybe, you know, you could, sometimes I don't know if that's the greatest thing in the world, but it kind of is what it is. Now, you know, to be honest, I wouldn't have fired Schutz for that. But, you know, if they, you know, their prerogative, and, I mean, the bottom line is, they had six other guys they read for it. Probably at least three of them can do the job, and it's a PA voice. So, anyway. But, some people, while this around, decided to have some fun with it, and suggested what Schutz said. At Feet Can Write tweeted, John would pick Bill Snyder over Tom Osborne. At 303 Husker tweeted, Dorothy Lynch is just watered down French dressing. At Nepolic, or gosh, I don't know how to say it. At Nepolic, or at NapLC tweeted, at Salky Eakin Stadiums, op-eds are tedious and derivative, and I'd rather read the back of a cereal box. At John Gaskins tweeted, Fairbury hot dogs are like eating rubber. Yeah, that probably would do them in. At Indomicat, 1 second for Texas was the right call. At EvenRude21, I wonder if Mike Riley has a cat. At Sims tweeted, it's okay to cheer for Husker football and Creighton basketball. Huskers should be celebrated, not scorned. Yeah, probably. That would get them fired. And NapLC tweeted again, John said the Heroes Trophy is a cynical corporate sponsorship cash grab. And there you have it. The best guesses as to hashtag what Schutz tweeted. Okay, everyone, since this is probably going to be my last podcast before Nebraska kicks off against BYU, I'm just going to make a prediction quick. You know, I think the one real wild card in this game is how much does BYU feel like they need to win it? And, you know, what I mean by that is in the third and fourth weeks of September, after playing a home game, I think against Virginia, BYU goes out and they play at UCLA and they finish up at Michigan. That's three road games in 4 weeks, two of them relatively longer cross-country trips. You know, BYU, they may feel that beating Nebraska is their best shot. And, you know, they may throw everything in the fire at Nebraska, change their offense, fake field goals, fake punts, that kind of thing. That's the one real wild card, is that, you know, as much as, this is not to say that Nebraska doesn't think this is important, but will Nebraska go empty the playbook as much as BYU will? I don't know. But having said all that, I am going to go, I'm going to say Nebraska wins at 27-24. I do think it's a pretty exciting game. You know, a little intrigue. I think there'll be at least one second half lead change. But I think Nebraska's, you know, going to get it done. I'll be curious. I mean, if this is indeed a close game, you know, does Nebraska, you know, have those fourth quarter heroics that they had under Bo Pelini? Do those stick around? or do those fade? So, you know, we'll see. But all in all, it's going to be an exciting start to the Mike Riley era. Thanks again for listening to the Maximum Red podcast. If you want to contact me, my email is Derek, D-E-R-E-K, at DerekJohnsonMuses.com. Again, that's Derek at DerekJohnsonMuses.com. My Twitter handle, if you want to follow me on Twitter, is at DerekJohnson05. As always, you can read my articles at HuskerMax.com under the Writers tab. Stay safe and go Big Red.